Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Greetings and salutations, my most excellent friends. It's Miller time here on this Tuesday, the 18th of June. I'm Steve Miller in Washington for Sonny Young, and this is the Sunny Side of Sports. Now, developing today, former UEFA President Michael Platini denied any wrongdoing during police questioning following his arrest as part of a corruption probe into the vote that gave the 2022 World Cup to Qatar. Platini, a former France national team great who became one of soccer's most powerful administrators before being banned from the game, was placed in custody when summoned to the Judicial Police's Anti-Corruption and Financial Crimes Office outside Paris. A judicial official told the Associated Press, on the condition of anonymity, confirming a report by online news publication Mediapart. The 63-year-old Platini can either be released or formally charged after the questioning ends. Now, turning to soccer itself, Monday, of course, saw a lot of action in France as the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup continued. Games were split between groups A and B. And for a complete rundown of what took place and what we can look forward to in Tuesday's matches, I spoke with Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports today. How are you doing?
Doing fine, thanks, Steve.
So there was a lot of action in Group A and B on Monday. Where do you want to start with?
Well, I think we have to look at the Super Falcons. You know, Nigeria lost out to France 1-0. Controversial penalty, that one, because it was taken a second time by France. The video ref said that the Super Falcons goalie wasn't in the right place, so it had to be taken a second time. It was a match that was perhaps a lot more muscular, a lot more pushing and shoving than we've seen in this tournament so far. But I think France were ready for that. They'd been told well in advance that Nigeria play a much tougher game than some of the others that they'd seen previously. Also, what else are we looking at? South Africa lost to Germany 4-0. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of a stinging loss there and could really be bad news for South Africa. Of course, some of these other players now are hoping their team will do enough to get through to those four best-placed third slots in the last, even to the knockout rounds. So, you know, an exciting tournament and really taking everyone, you know, whisking everyone along in this great feeling that this is the first time that the Women's Football World Cup has really had such a huge audience and such a huge worldwide following.
That's true. And then, of course, other games that took place on Monday were Spain and China, which resulted in a 0-0 end at the end of full time, with Spain advancing, as well as Norway earning a hard-earned victory against the women from South Korea, 2-1.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Norway has been one of those teams that everyone's kept an eye on. You know, every now and then you look at the group stages and you think, okay, well, let's look at that. You know, France are an easy one to go through there. Group B, Germany, of course, they'll go through. But Norway has always kind of appealed to everyone, and they've played a good tournament. And don't forget, you know, Norway has been at the forefront of some of the more political side of women's football. They've been leading the charge, really, for fairer pay for the women footballers to be paid, if not exactly the same as the men, then at least, you know, bump it up to maybe half as much as the men are getting, and asking FIFA to work towards more of that parity. So a lot of goodwill towards the Norwegians there.
Yeah, and you also mentioned that France was, of course, one of the expected teams to move on to the knockout round, and they're doing so with the maximum points possible in this opening round.
They have indeed. You know, it's 3 out of 3 in that opening round, and that was exactly what they wanted. Of course, the next round will be certainly a bit easier because they say it'll be easier because they'll be playing one of those best-placed third teams. So France, everyone was a little bit hesitant going into this tournament because there were so many expectations. The talk here, Steve, was that this is it. You know, France have now got a chance to be World Cup holders, both for the men and the women. So, you know, make no mistake, they went in there with huge expectations. They've lived up to it a bit, but knowing full well that the whole country is behind them, and that knowing full well they want them to get that trophy.
Yeah, and which brings us to today. We have a couple of matches today, Jamaica and Australia, as well as Italy and Brazil. What can you tell us about those two matchups?
Well, let's look at the Jamaica-Australia match there. That's going to be played in Reims, to the east of Paris. Tough match. Again, it's another one of these ones that both sides need a win. The Matildas from Australia came here with a lot of hope. They'd had a good run-up to the tournament. They, again, you know, carried the great weight of the nation with them, and they thought they'd done well. They haven't done as well as they hoped to. Of course, Italy-Brazil. Isn't that just a dream match, Steve? You're if you're going to watch two teams come out and play, fabulous stadium down there. They're playing down in Grenoble in the southeast of France. That's going to be just an absolute peach of a match. And let's hope that both sides come out and play the sort of football that we're used to seeing them play. It'll be a dream match, really.
That's true. And, you know, Italy is at the top of Group C, so they're expected, of course, to move on. But Australia and Brazil are also tied in that same group. And one of the interesting things I think about Australia is that if we take a look at their current and back seven outings in the Women's World Cup, the first four times they didn't make it to the next round. They've made it to the next round the last three times. So if they are able to move to the knockout round this tournament, it would be their fourth time consecutive to kind of even things out, so to speak.
Yeah, but you know, Steve, I don't want to sound as though I'm being a bit partisan here, but if they make it to the next round, they're up against France.
Oh, that is true, and that's a very tough match.
That's a tough match. That's the other thing to remember. For all of those teams that sneak through as the best placed thirds, they get a tough competitor in that first knockout round. So, it would be great because, again, you're looking at countries like Australia where not only is football second or even the third your national sport, but also for women's football. It's not a big sport in Australia. It's always been Aussie rules, Aussie league, rugby, and then perhaps football, and then perhaps after that women's football. So if the Matildas do well, it will be great to see them in the knockout stages, but they're probably thinking, gosh, we're going to get another spot in the limelight playing against France, who really do have their tails up.
That is true. Catherine Field is a reporter based in Paris, France. She is joining us on the phone today. Thank you so much for being with us on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great to talk to you, Steve.
Now, as we heard, France beat Nigeria 1-0 in their Monday Group A action to move on to the next round with 9 points. Nigerian football fans are reacting to the FIFA Women's World Cup match. If we take a look at some of the fans, Iron Mike Mbonye was able to speak to several of them on how the Nigerian women's national team, also known as the Super Falcons, were playing in that particular game. They praised the Falcons for holding the French team to only a 1-0 victory despite losing the match. And for more, we're going to toss the microphone over to Iron Mike.
Hi, Steve. I'm at the viewing center in a suburb of Lagos called Gowon Estate. France has just beaten Nigeria in their last group match. I'd like to ask some soccer fans who watched the match to share their views on how they saw the match.
My name is Okoro Nathaniel. From this match today, the Super Falcons showed their mettle. They played well. Kudos to the goalkeeper. However, the problem is with the officiating. There were problems with the officiating. I'm not very happy with it. There are instances where there are supposed to be
fouls committed by France, it was not blown. I'm not happy with the officiate.
My name is Chidi. Yeah, the Super Falcons, they really played well, but I think the penalty was kind of controversial. And I just wish they qualified through the best losers.
My name is Kingsley. Well, I think the penalty decision was a little bit harsh, because the second one, it was not really a shot on target. Like, the penalty was missed, so we recall the penalty for the new Pyro was very harsh on Nigeria, and it shouldn't have been a red card for the first penalty. I hope we will qualify for the best losers.
I'm Virgilio Sego. The match is being played well played, but the two penalty given to the DC is out of malice. Our girls play their best, but it's supposed to be a draw.
This is the only African team standing, and France as a host nation, you have gone through. You don't need to manipulate to be there. You played a very good game. Without that penalty, you can still score goals. So that penalty coming in and red card, I dispute it. It would have been a penalty, but no red card.
Well. It's such an interesting game, but the whole penalty just spoiled the game. That's for me.
My name is Michael. The match went well. It went well. It's a nice game. For me, people are complaining that was maybe a passion. No, I think it went well.
And that was Iron Mike Mbonye giving the lowdown on fan reaction from Lagos, Nigeria, on the France-Nigeria Group A action in the Women's World Cup. I'm Steve Miller, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now, next month, the 2019 Netball World Cup gets underway at the M&S Bank Arena in Liverpool, England. It's the 15th such event, and like other World Cups, is held every 4 years. And this happens to be the premier competition in international netball. And despite the event's 60-year history, the game isn't too widely well-known. So before we move on, here's a quick breakdown of the game. Netball is played by two teams of seven players and derived from early versions of basketball. Everything goes back to somewhere in, say, the 1890s in England. But as of 2011, the International Netball Federation has more than 60 national teams organized into five global regions. Games are played on a rectangular court with a raised goal ring at the ends, but unlike basketball, there's no backboard. Each team attempts to score goals by passing a ball down the court and shooting it through the goal ring. Players' roles are defined by the positions that they play and also restrict their movement to certain areas on the court. A player with the ball can hold onto it or pass it or shoot it, but they can only do so for 3 seconds. So, there's your basic primer on netball. I do that to share with you because Zimbabwe has its first ever team headed to the 2019 World Cup. And I recently spoke with Michael Karate about it. You know, Michael, netball is one of my favorite sports when you take a look at the different sporting venues and opportunities around the world. Can you give me a brief idea of what took this Zimbabwe team to the World Cup this year?
In the first instances, netball is not a very popular sport in this country, but the qualification of the women's team has helped to stimulate a lot of interest. At the moment, the girls are very enthusiastic. They are ready. They want to go to the World Cup because this is a once in a life opportunity, one that has already created awareness of the sport, and two, something that will create avenues for them as individuals, that is to get opportunities to play for clubs abroad and make extra money, considering the fact that there is harsh economic climate in Zimbabwe, and the currency that they would earn probably can help cushion them. But at the moment, the girls are also worried about the sort of support they've received from the government. For instance, while football has received, they are trying to raise $500,000 for a football team that is going to the Africa Cup of Nations, but they've not done anything for the netball team that is going to a far much important tournament like the World Cup. But as I've said before, the girls are ready and they're preparing fully for the World Cup. What they are looking forward is to probably go beyond the group stages and create that atmosphere of camaraderie, friendship, and probably fun.
Before we get into the nuts and bolts of the actual World Cup, you said that netball really isn't that popular in Zimbabwe. Now, in general, netball is fairly popular in, say, Commonwealth countries. And I'll be honest with you, I never heard about netball until about 2012 when a colleague from Australia was playing it. Since, you know, we do have a team from Zimbabwe going to the World Cup, and you said it is generating some interest, is the sport slowly becoming more popular there?
What is happening now since the girls qualified for the World Cup, there's a lot of interest. For example, netball is now being taken seriously in schools. And right now, there are a number of big companies who have come in to bankroll this team that is going to the World Cup. So that sort of interest only that has come from qualifying for the World Cup has helped to encourage a growing band of other schoolgirls to at least aspire to take up this sport. Because most of them in schools, they participate in the so popular sporting disciplines, for example, athletics and football, were at the most popular. But right now, the qualification of this team has helped to create, if not to take, those other a few others left behind to take to be involved in netball. And the president of the Zimbabwe Netball Association, Letsia Chipandu, has been going all around preaching about what these girls have done and where they are going. You know, in this country, it is rare for somebody to just go to England without forking something from his or her own pocket. So this has raised a lot of awareness.
You mentioned that the girls are experiencing what you said was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. If we take a look at the other teams that have qualified for the World Cup, how do you rank Zimbabwe going into this tournament?
Zimbabwe are in the same group with Australia, Northern Ireland, and Sri Lanka. And two teams from that group qualify, with the third probably going through as well as the third best placed team among all the teams that are going there. But I think from the look of things, Australia and Northern Ireland might prove too powerful for the Zimbabwean team. But from the outset, I think they can beat Sri Lanka and probably qualify as the third placed team. What they want right now, they believe that if they can get out of the group stages, then they would have done more than what is expected of them, because nobody is giving them a chance right now. So they believe in themselves that they can upset the apple cart and qualify to the next stage. And I was speaking to one of the coaches, Ropafadzo Mutauki. He indicated that the girls, to them, the netball tournament is coming late. They wanted to play in the final as of now.
Oh, that's exciting. Taking a look at the Zimbabwe team roster, as the tournament gets underway, who should the international audience be looking at, not only in terms of who's on the Zimbabwe team, who may be their star players, but other athletes in the competition?
There are a number of people, as this team has been drawn from players from all the four corners of the country. They held the regional qualifiers, then the provincial qualifiers, and from the whole country they picked what they believe is the cream, which proved to be the cream by qualifying after coming second at the Africa qualifiers. So I think from the look of things, we've got players like Lorraine Manjoro, who grew up in the rural areas of Lomboshava. You know, those are areas where the other not-so-popular sports sometimes get recognition. So Lorraine Manjoro is one of the star players of the team. So is Esela Ndlovu, who comes from Matabeleland in Bulawayo. There is also Alice Tewera, who is based in Harare. So I think those are the core of the team, whom I can say they are the vital cogs of the Zimbabwean machine. Although from the outset, this team plays an all-round team, not as individuals.
And that was reporter Michael Carity speaking to me from Zimbabwe about the nation's team headed to the International Netball Federation's World Cup to be played in England beginning July 12. A tenth suspect on the shooting of Boston former Red Sox baseball player David Ortiz appeared in a Santo Domingo court yesterday, where he received a one-year preventative sentence amid ongoing investigations into the shooting of Ortiz. Wearing a police helmet and a bulletproof vest, suspect Alexander Perez was escorted to his court hearing. He faces charges relating to the shooting of Ortiz, and television host Joel Lopez at a Santo Domingo bar earlier this month. Ortiz was shot while seated in an open-air nightclub in his native Dominican Republic earlier this month. Known as Big Papi, Ortiz is still a hero in Boston for his role in three World Series championships. He retired from Major League Baseball in 2016 after 14 seasons with the Red Sox. I'm Steve Miller, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports from the Voice of America. Now, Brown Daily Herald sportswriter and VOA intern Ryan Handel will be giving us a preview of Thursday's NBA draft and which African players could be selected. Ryan?
Nice for having me, Steve. The 2019 NBA draft will take place this Thursday, June 20th, at the Barclays Center in New York City. 60 of college basketball's top stars and promising international prospects will hear their names called by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. Most of the pre-draft buzz is around expected number one pick Zion Williamson, who wowed the world with his spectacular dunks in his single college season at Duke. But several other players could be future All-Stars as well, including three with ties to the African continent. One of them is Bol Bol, son of the former Washington Bolts shot-blocking legend Manute Bol. Bol Bol had an injury-plagued year at Oregon in his only season there, but he showcases a ton of NBA potential. Like his father, Bol Bol was born in Sudan, but later moved to the United States. Bol Bol checks in at a colossal 7 feet 2 inches, but he certainly has the height he needs for the center position. And although he only played 9 games in his lone season at Oregon, he nearly averaged a double-double. The main concern with Bol is that he only weighed in at 208 pounds, so he'll need to pack on muscle to withstand the physicality of the NBA and avoid serious injury. Another African-born prospect who could go in the first round is forward Sekou Doumbouya, who currently plays in France but was born in Guinea. Doumbouya is only 18 years old but is already a star in France's first-tier professional league for the team Limoges CSP. Doumbouya comes in at about 6'9 and 230 pounds and is highly athletic, so he can be a solid contributor on both ends of the floor. Whichever team lands Doumbouya will get a great shooter, an aggressive defender, and an intriguing talent. A final player to watch out for with ties to Africa is Florida State's Mifiondu Kabengele. Kabengele is Canadian-born, but he's the nephew of Congolese immigrant and NBA Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo. Despite seeing limited minutes for Florida State this year, Kabengele averaged 13 points and 6 rebounds per game from the center position. He comes in at 6'9", but for his size, he is extremely athletic. He excelled in the vertical jump and agility drills at the NBA Combine. Although Kabengele is only expected to be drafted in the second round or late first round at best, he could be a valuable big man for the team that selects him. I'm looking forward to Thursday's draft, and I'm excited to see where these African players land.
Thanks, Ryan. That was Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel. Now, England opener Jason Roy will miss at least 2 Cricket World Cup games due to a hamstring injury, but Captain Ian Morgan is bullish about overcoming a back spasm and playing against Afghanistan. Roy suffered a hamstring tear in Friday's win over West Indies, and Morgan confirmed James Vince, who had a lengthy net session at Old Trafford yesterday, will replace him as the opener today. The 26-year-old Roy will miss the matches against Afghanistan and Sri Lanka, but Morgan is confident that he will be back before the June 30th game against India. England is fourth in the table with 6 points from 4 matches and will be overwhelming favorites against bottom-placed Afghanistan, who have lost all 4 games. Afghanistan captain Gulbadin Naib said he was hoping for a spin-friendly wicket, which would suit the likes of Rashid Khan. Despite not winning any games thus far, Naib said the tournament had been a good learning experience for his players. And that wraps up the June 18th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and engineer, Thomas Blondette, thank you so much for joining us on this terrific Tuesday. Have a great day, everyone. And until next time, I am Steve Miller in Washington. Don't forget, Dan Friedel returns to the anchor chair tomorrow. And that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, thousands of men, women, and children are forced to flee to escape violence and persecution. June 20th marks World Refugee Day. Global refugee awareness on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers who have been reviewing observation data from the Kepler spacecraft have occasionally been treated to pyrotechnic displays they call superflares. These superflares are incredibly powerful bursts of high-energy radiation that are being blasted from relatively young and active stars. Scientists say superflares are hundreds to thousands of times more powerful than the largest recorded flares from our own sun. A team of astronomers say they have found evidence that suggests stars as old as our 4.6 billion year old sun can produce superflares once every few thousand years. They said if the sun should produce a superflare, Earth would be bathed in a blast of high energy radiation. This could disrupt various electronic devices around the world, cause widespread power blackouts, and take orbiting communication satellites out of commission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thanks for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. We're honoring Avicii, one of EDM's greatest producers, who tragically passed away last year, with a month-long giveaway of his new album, Tim. The album includes vocals from many prominent artists, including Chris Martin and more. Tune in at 1500 Universal every weekday in June for your chance to win a free copy of Tim. Anyone who makes a request has a chance to win.
Border Crossings!
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English. The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour. Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.